And now, live from Tribune Tower, Chicago, this is the WGN Radio Theater with Carl Amari.
Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
Yes, it's Maxwell House Coffee Time, starring George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
It's time once again for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Countdown for blastoff. X minus one.
Richard Diamond, private detective.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly.
Kraft presents The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah.
That's 11:07 on a Saturday evening, February 4th, 2017. This is the WGN Radio Theater. I'm your host, Carl Amari. It's program 151 in the series. To my right, very vivacious, Lisa Wolf. What's up, Lisa?
Hi, Carl.
Dimply Lisa.
Well, I'm happy to be here tonight.
And in the booth, the one and only, Elif Garris, our producer. What's up, Elif?
Hi, not too much. What's up with you guys?
Looking forward to some classic radio shows on the WGN Radio Theater. That's what we do here every Saturday and Sunday night. Did you know that, Elif?
I didn't. Thank you for telling me.
Well, if any of our listeners are tuning in for the first time, you're going to hear a Western adventure of Gunsmoke. Of course, all of our listeners are going to hear a Western adventure of Gunsmoke.
Not just the first time.
No. And then Phil Harris and Alice Faye, one of my favorite comedy shows of the golden age of radio. And then a good kind of detective adventure on Box 13 with Alan Ladd. It's all brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop. Brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actress stars in the upcoming horror film Get Out, about a man who visits his girlfriend's family estate and realizes that something bizarre is afoot.
Very bizarro.
Very bizarre. I like that horror
stuff. And
what
do they win?
Lou Malnati's gift certificate for $25.
Not bad. 312-981-7200. That's the number to call. And that's also later if you want to text us and talk to us and give us suggestions.
They could do it right now if they want to.
But they have to call to win.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
For sure.
All right. Here's a hint. This actress played Trish in The 40-Year-Old Virgin.
I'm not trying to change you. I like you. I'm trying to help you grow up, Andy.
Well, thanks.
I like him and I like her.
Who is that actress? Give us a call, 312-981-7200. Win a Lou Malnati's pizza. We'll be right back.
This is the WGN Radio Theater, show 151. We're playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play it one more time.
I'm not trying to change you. I like you. I'm trying to help you grow up, Andy.
Well, thanks.
I like you too, Carl.
I haven't grown up yet.
I know. We have Steven on the line from Skokie. Hi, how are you?
Well, fine. I love your show. You're great.
Oh, thank you. It's great to hear from you.
Thank you.
He was talking to me.
I love you both.
No, just kidding.
We love you too, Steve.
We appreciate that. Who is that actress?
It's Catherine Keener.
Catherine Keener's right. And isn't she great in that movie? Do you like that movie?
I love it. I've seen it four times.
I think I've seen it at least that many, maybe more. There's something about that movie that just gets me.
Yeah,
right?
It's
and
hilarious.
I think it's one of your favorites, right, Carl?
Absolutely.
So, Stephen, we're thrilled to give you a Lou Malnati's gift certificate for $25. Home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. Find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations. Order online at loumalnatis.com. Thanks a lot again. We really appreciate your support.
Okay, thank you very, very
Take
much.
Take care.
Thanks, Steve. All right, it's time for, in my opinion, the best Western series of the golden age of radio. It was Gunsmoke, adult western created by Norman McDonald and John Meston. Came to radio in 1952, lasted all the way to 1961, and it was stories in and around Dodge City, Kansas in the mid to late 1800s. Marshal Matt Dillon was played by William Conrad. Parley Bear was Deputy Chester Proudfoot. Howard McNear was Doc Adams, and Georgia Ellis was Kitty Russell. Dillon was a lonely, isolated man, toughened by a hardened life, and this series was adapted for television in 1955. It ran, Lisa, all the way to 1974. Imagine that, 1955 to 1974.
Isn't that one of the longest-running
It really was, yeah. It was ranked number one on television from 1957 all the way to 1961.
Unbelievable.
I mean, that's unheard of, really. But we have a radio adventure for you now from the very first year it was on the air, 1952, October 31st to be exact, Halloween of 1952. This is called The Overland Express. It stars William Conrad. Here's part one of Gunsmoke.
Dodge City and in the territory on West, there's just one way to handle the killers and the spoilers, and that's with a U.S. Marshal and the smell of gun smoke. Gunsmoke, starring William Conrad. The transcribed story of the violence that moved west with young America. The story of a man who moved with it. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
A stranger named Joe Beaudry killed a man in Dodge and then got on his horse and rode 90 miles northwest. He made it across the Smoky Hill River before his horse played out and fell behind a small knoll. Beaudry put a knife in him and settled down to wait. Half hour later, he shot my horse out from under me and crippled Chester's with a slug in the shoulder. Then he gave up. He just threw down his guns and walked toward us across the prairie. His hands in the air.
You think it's a trick, Mr. Dillon?
I don't know, Chester, but if he makes a move, I'll kill him.
Yes, sir.
That's far enough, Beaudry. Now turn around.
I ain't armed, Marshal.
No. You know, I'm curious, Beaudry. Why didn't you shoot it out?
I don't want to kill anybody, Marshal.
You killed a man in Dodge.
He went for his gun. I had to.
Some of the witnesses say he didn't.
Oh, sure. Friends of his. I heard him. That's why I lit out.
Man looks guilty when he runs. You should have stayed and faced it
there.
Now,
what kind of shake could I get in a strange town, Marshal? Everybody be against me.
The law protects you if you're innocent. You'll have to stand trial now anyway.
Well, maybe I made a mistake, but I'm still alive.
Yeah, and a long way from Dodge.
Say, by gracious, that's right. How are we going to get back, Mr. Dillon?
Well, we crossed the Overland Express route about 5 miles back. We'll just walk to the road and wait for a stage, I guess.
Yeah, but the stage don't go up to Dodge from here, sir.
Well, we'll take it into Fort Donner. Maybe the Army will lend us some horses there and we can turn them back at Fort Dodge.
Marshal.
Yeah.
Well, I know you don't owe me no favors, Marshal, but I never been arrested before. I'd be kind of ashamed in front of everybody on stage.
Well, that's tough, Beaudry. What do you expect me to do?
Only a little thing, Marshal, won't make any difference to you. Just don't let him know that you're taking me in, is all.
All right, Beaudry, I guess it doesn't matter.
Thanks.
I'm not wearing a badge anyway. But you make one move and I'll hogtie you and you'll ride on the roof. Or you'll be dead.
Well, it's a deal, Marshal.
You'll get a fair trial, Beaudry. If you're innocent, you'll go free.
Well, if it is a fair trial, I'm going back to California. I don't know why I ever left it.
You come from California?
Yeah. Hey, Marshal, look, is it all right if I lug my saddle back with me?
Yeah, sure. We're not leaving ours. Chester, I'll go with Beaudry and get his guns.
Yes, Mr. Dillon. I sure do wish you'd stop closer to the stage road, though, Beaudry. 5 miles is a long way packing a saddle.
Go take care of your horse, Chester. Let's get out of here.
Yes, sir. It's a doggone shame, though. That was a mighty good horse.
Come on, Beaudry.
I sure hope the stage hasn't gone by already, Mr. Dillon.
Why don't you get off your back and look down the road, Chester?
Well, I declare. Looky, Andre, it's a-coming. And it's painted bright red, too, Mr. Dillon.
Hey, what if they don't stop for us, Marshal?
Road agents don't usually carry their saddles. The driver will notice that if he's awake.
Driving a six-horse hitch ought to keep him awake.
Yeah, but not sober.
That's
a shotgun the messenger's holding.
He doesn't need it. We want a ride, that's all.
Where's your horses?
Marshal, please, you remember what you said.
We lost them.
You don't look like greenhorns to me.
It can happen to anyone.
That's true enough. The one in the middle ain't even armed. Pick him up, Hank.
All right, Berryman, it's your treasure box. How far are you going?
Fort Downer.
It's about 60 miles to Fort Downer. You're crowding us. That'll be 15 cents a mile.
15 cents? How much is that, Mr. Dillon?
About $9, Chester.
$9 a piece, that is, and payable right here.
All right. It's high, but I can't argue with you now. Here you are. 20, 5, 6, 7.
All right, mister. Get in. I don't know how the passengers are going to like this, though.
You got room for a couple more in here?
Anybody can't keep his horse or to walk home.
There's room for two, maybe, but not three.
Oh?
Take a look for yourself, mister.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Chester?
Oh, now, sir, I can't...
I don't want Brodery on top. You'll have to get up there, Chester.
Well, I guess you're right, sir.
But I think you fellas ought to charge us less if I can't ride inside.
The Overland stage guarantees a ride, mister. Comfort's a passenger's problem.
Get in, Brodery.
Yeah.
Now get fixed somehow. You've held us up long enough.
Give me a hand now, then.
You don't look like a judge, mister.
I'm not a judge.
Well, you must be important somehow. We order these men around, and that fellow on top there calls you sir.
Dillon?
Well, let's just say that I'm sort of the boss of this outfit, mister.
What'd you say your name was?
I didn't say. It happens to be Dillon.
Well, I'm Zimmer. Old man here called himself Gann.
My name is Gann. I ain't ashamed of it. I don't give a long hoot what any of you call yourselves.
Gann's kind of crusty, but he's sober. That's more than I can say for the other two here. They only wake up long enough to pull on that jug they got and get drunk enough to go back to sleep.
Well, that's not a bad way to travel if your stomach can stand it, I guess.
No, I ain't do it myself if I was younger.
What business you in, Dillon?
You ask too many questions, Zimmer. You ain't got no manners.
Nobody's asking you, old man.
Good, good. Then I don't have to listen to your gobbling.
Now, listen here, Gann. Any more out of you, and I'll tear you apart.
You can't spoke me. I'm too old. 85, mister. Would you believe it?
No, sir, I wouldn't. That's mighty old. You sure don't look it.
I knew Meriwether Lewis, mister. Met him in St. Louis when he and Clark come back from the Pacific.
Now who's doing all the talking?
Leave him be, Zimmer. There's no harm in passing the time.
Look, mister. You may be the boss of these other fellas, but you don't run me.
Nobody's trying to run you. Just take it easy.
Don't pay him no mind, Dillon. He's just nervous about something.
What are you driving at, old man?
We'll be in Monument Station about an hour, Dillon. Spend the night there. Hope the chow's improved. Last time I was there, all they had was fat pork. One passenger says, I never eat fat pork. So the cook told him, well, then just help yourself to the mustard.
Monument Station was a long, low hut made of sun-dried, mud-colored bricks, with a flat roof, thatched and then sodded. The one building served as an eating room in the daytime and a bunkhouse at night. There wasn't much air inside, and after dinner, fat pork and mustard, Chester, Beaudry, and I went out to the corral for a smoke.
Whew. My gracious alive, I hate to think of sleeping in there. All those men, why, a fella could suffocate. And I'll bet that stock tender hasn't washed himself since he left home.
He said he washed his blankets anyways, just this morning.
Yeah, sure. You know how? He spreads it on an ant hill for a couple of hours.
Oh, well, that settles it. I'm sleeping outside.
All right, Chester. We just don't get too cozy. Half the night you're standing guard over Beaudry here. I'll watch him the other half.
Well, I'm not going to run away, Marshal.
You ran once, Beaudry.
All right, I'll tell you something, and maybe you'll trust me a little then.
Tell me what?
Would you like to know who Zimmer is?
Zimmer? He that real testy fella? I don't like him at all. He's always on the prod about something or other.
Wait a minute, Chester. Wait a minute. What about Zimmer, Beaudry?
His real name is Chess Rhine.
So?
Well, at least that's the name was under his picture.
Well, where was this picture, Beaudry?
In California, tacked onto a pole.
Go on.
Well, I think the reward was $500. Of course, I ain't certain.
You sure it was his picture?
Yeah, Marshal, I'm sure. Heard a lot of talk about him in Sacramento just before I left.
What kind of talk?
Well, like one time he rode in a stagecoach as a passenger, and he was peaceful enough until some fellows on horses, they stopped that stage in a canyon somewheres, and then this here Chess Rhine, he pulled a gun on the other passengers, and he disarmed them whilst the boys outside unloaded the treasure box. They had an extra saddle horse along, and Rhine, he rode off with them. That's the way I heard it.
Seems to me he went to a lot of trouble.
Sometimes the passengers give road agents as much fight as the driver and messenger, Chester. They feel safe because they're inside.
Yeah, and that's what Chess Rhine figured. What, are you going to arrest him, Marshal?
I can't arrest a man without cause, Beaudry. You may be telling the truth, but I don't know that for sure. I can check on Zimmer when we get to Fort Donner, but all I can do to Lynn's keep an eye on him.
Well, this stage will be robbed long before it gets to Fort Donner, Marshal.
Yeah, maybe, but not without a fight. Thanks for telling me, Beaudry, and for your sake, I hope it's the truth. If it isn't, you're going to be in more trouble than you are now. All right, keep an eye on him, Chester. I'll be back in a few minutes.
Yes, sir.
Berryman?
Yeah?
Out here a minute, will you?
What's up, mister?
I want to talk to you, that's all. Alone. Come on outside, huh?
Be right back, Hank. Save some of that whiskey for me.
Right, Barry.
What's on your mind, mister?
How long you been an express messenger, Berryman?
2 years? Not that it's any business of yours.
You run into any trouble in that time?
Some? Why?
I just want to know if you can handle yourself, that's all.
You want to find out?
Look, Berryman, you know my name. It's Dillon. I'm Matt Dillon. I'm the U.S. Marshal out of Dodge.
Dillon. Yeah, I think I remember seeing you there.
Good. Now tell me this. You carrying much in that treasure box of yours?
The messenger who brought it as far as Pond Creek said it was $50,000, unsigned currency, mostly.
Mm-hmm.
Something up, Marshal?
Well, maybe. Tell me, what's the best place for a holdup between here and Fort Donner?
Well, Willow Bend, I expect. Man on a horse could keep hidden there till we were right on top of him.
All right, tell the driver to whip those horses through Willow Bend as fast as they'll go. Chester will be on the roof to help you, and I'll sort of organize the passengers inside.
Well, now, if there's going to be a holdup, Marshal, you
well,
should...
Well, I don't know, but we'll play it safe. And, by the way, Berryman, don't let on inside there about this, huh? Or, who I am. All right?
Okay, Marshal.
Thank you. Good night, Berryman.
Night, Marshal.
Oh, Marshal.
Yeah?
We got a jug of station whiskey inside if you want to drink.
I don't think it'd do much good. I've heard of that stuff freezing solid on a cold night.
Well, you would know. You like those libations, Lisa.
Yeah, I'm a
Which
big...
one of the whiskeys freezes up on a cold night?
I've never tasted whiskey. So...
You never have?
No.
Oh, really?
I'm sheltered.
Well, you used to own a couple of liquor stores, didn't you?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, back in the day.
Yeah,
you know,
back in the...
In the 30s, 40s,
1930s. 50s.
Yeah.
This is Gunsmoke. We're tuning into Overland Express from 1952, October 31st. William Conrad, who later went on to star in Jake and the Fat Man. He was also Cannon, right?
I remember Cannon.
And, you know, he was the voice, he was the narrator of The Fugitive, the television series The Fugitive. He was also the narrator of Rocky and Bullwinkle, the animated series,
yep,
which I know you liked as
I
a
did.
Kid.
I mean,
Me
it
too.
Was, you know, a few years back, but
yeah.
I did.
Yeah.
My age is showing, I'm afraid.
William Conrad. He probably did more radio shows than any other actor. William Conrad. So many of these shows had him, especially CBS shows. He was really kind of a guy who must have just hung out at CBS all the time and just did show after show after show.
He's smart.
Yeah. All right, let's take a quick break. Then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater. 11:35. Thank you, David. All right. We are here, Lisa. We're back.
We never left.
I saw you like 6 days ago.
That's it? I haven't seen you all week?
Pretty much.
I felt like I have.
You
I talked to you.
A bunch of times.
I say you. She, always texting me. Can you talk?
She calls
this is what
me
Carl
and texts
does.
Me and
can you
calls
talk?
And calls. She's like, Carl, call me.
No, Carl texts me and says, can you talk?
I've
every
gotten
day.
That before from Carl.
Can just, you talk? And sometimes, I'm just like, no.
Sometimes I just have an urge to talk to Elif. Or I have an urge to talk to Lisa.
Yeah, you need to control your urges sometimes, Carl. Yeah.
You know what? You
I've
know
been
what?
Told that before.
I bet you have.
Carl and I, that was great. Carl and I talked about music once on the phone.
Yeah.
Well, that's exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then I was like calling her and saying, no, it's not that band, it's this band. And she was at work. She was at work, you know, and I was bugging her at work. She was like, yeah. I'm going to get fired. I'm like, well, I just want to tell you, it was the Rolling Stones. It wasn't this band.
Led Zeppelin.
And it's very important to
you
know
get
that.
These urges and you just have to like,
yeah, it's like
go with it.
Or otherwise, I'll spontaneously combust.
I've noticed that.
I'll just, and then you'll have to do the show
I bet
alone.
You talk all night long.
No.
While you're sleeping.
No, I snore.
I know. David, I think David mentioned that you snore.
How would David know I snore?
Well, I don't know.
Oh, boy. All right. Let's get back now to William Conrad as U.S. Marshal Matt Dillon on Gunsmoke.
Next morning, just after sunup, the stage left Monument Station. It was 10 miles to Willow Bend and 12 miles to the next change of horses at a small swing station run by a lone stock tender. Zimmer, or Chess Ryan, if that's who he was, seemed nervous. Too nervous for an experienced road agent, but maybe he had figured me for what I was, and that gave him the jumps. Anyway, I sat next to him so I could handle him faster if and when the time came. We drove at an easy pace until we neared the bend. And then the driver popped his whip over the teams and they began to run hard. But suddenly he was pulling them in and braking at the same time. One move by Zimmer at that point and I'd have killed or crippled him.
What are we stopping here for? Hey, driver, what's up?
Wheel's been dragging. Couldn't you feel it pull?
All right, everybody out.
Well, what's the idea? Driver, what's wrong?
A wheel's stuck. Can't pull it off with you in there. Hurry it up.
Beaudry, huh? Get over there by Chester.
Well, don't you worry about me. You keep an eye on Reem.
Go on now.
Come on.
What do you think, Dillon?
Now, they'd have jumped us by now, Berryman, while everybody was still inside. But keep your head up anyway. You watch the other side of the coach. I'll stay here.
Okay.
What do you mean it wasn't greased? Why not?
It's sizzling hot. We have to cool before we can take it off. That drunken fool at Monument didn't grease this one, that's all. Take a bullwhip to him when I get back there.
Well, you can grease it now, can't you?
I could, mister, if I had any grease.
Well, you mean you haven't got any?
Not unless I render you down and make some. Now, get out of my way.
Well, any more of that and I'll... All right, forget it. What are we going to do?
How about grass, driver?
Hey, that's an idea.
Wrap it around the spindle and go till it wears out. It won't last long, but we can keep putting it on till we get to the next station.
We'll be all day stopping every half mile. Why don't you greenhorns ask a real man how to fix it?
All right, Pop. How are we going to fix it?
Cheese.
Cheese?
Yes, cheese. Cheese. It works fine, too.
Yeah, it might at that.
I suppose you brought some cheese along just in case, Pop, huh?
I brought it along to eat. You're in. Well, I'll let you have it. It's in my carpet bag.
Old Gant's cheese worked fine, and we left Willow Bend without more trouble. I began to figure Beaudry for a liar, but he just sat there, staring out at the prairie, and said nothing. A few miles further on, as we approached the swing station, I heard a shot from the messenger, and then Beaudry pointed ahead. and I leaned out to take a look. The station was a small one-room adobe hut with the usual corral at the rear, but there wasn't a horse in sight. And out of the two windows facing us poured thin streams of white smoke. As the stage pulled to a stop, I saw two arrows embedded in a half-open door.
Come on, Cheezer. Look at them arrows.
Wait a minute. Let me take a look in there.
Let's all take a look, Zimmer.
Where's the stock tent? Did they kill him?
They tried to fire the place, but it just smoldered.
Who are those two men?
I don't know. But this one's still alive.
Well, that's the stock tender. But who are those two?
Never mind them. They're dead.
Scalp. Indian sure must have surprised him. Sneaked right up.
All right, Berryman. Let's get the stock tender out of this smoke. Take his head there.
Yeah.
They scalped him, too. And he ain't even dead.
Never mind that. Just pick him up easy. All right, fella. Stage is here.
Indians, Comanches, they scalped me. Never even heard them.
Ask him who those other men were. What were they doing here?
Leave him be. The man's dying.
Water. Give me a drink.
Chester, get the water bag.
Yes, sir.
Can't you let the man alone, Dillon?
Scalp three men, stole horses. That's Comanches for you.
Here's the water, sir.
No, thanks. Here, fella. Here now. Take a drink. There we go.
Road agents. Those two. They held me up. They said they'd hide till the horses were unhitched. And then hold up the stage. Had a partner on the stage to keep the passengers out of it.
What was his name? Their partner, I mean.
Put my head down, mister. It's bubbling over.
The stock tender's eyes clouded up and went blank as I lay his head back. And then there was a scuffle behind me, and before anybody could move, Zimmer grabbed Gant, and using him as a shield, he walked backward toward the stage. The old man stopped struggling when he felt Zimmer's gun in his back, and the rest of us just stood there watching, helpless.
First man draws a gun, Gant'll die.
You gave yourself away, Chess Ryan.
Take it easy, man. Take it easy. This fool's nervous.
Shut up. You, driver. Lead those teams down the road a piece, and then come back here. Yan and I will take the stage alone. Come on!
You better do what he says, driver. He's scared enough to shoot.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I better. Come on.
Come on. What are you stopping for? Take him 50 yards down there.
Can't do it. That wheel's froze up again. He ain't going anywhere at that stage.
Might as well give up right now, young fool.
I never did like you, Gant.
Ryan, listen to me. You've made your play and you've lost. If you give up now, the charges will be attempted robbery. If you don't, they'll probably turn into murder.
Who are you anyway, mister?
I'm a U.S. Marshal.
Well, you're not arresting nobody. Not unless you want Gant dead. You make a move and his blood will be on your hands, Marshal.
You can't hold him there forever, Ryan. The stage going west passes through sometime today. What'll you do then?
He's right. That stage passes this station about noon. I drive it myself half the time.
I'll think of something. First, I want all your men to unload your weapons. Line up and throw them in a pile there. One at a time. Would you even start to try anything and I'll blow a hole in the old man.
You think you would, Mr. Dillon?
He's so nervous now, it's a wonder he doesn't do it by accident, Chester.
I get going, don't stand there. One at a time now. And use two fingers to do it.
All right, man, you better do as he says.
Now? Go ahead. Easy. All right, next man.
Beaudry.
Yeah?
You're the only man who might stop this.
How?
Pretend to join him.
You trust me that much?
I have to.
Okay, perfect.
All right, easy now. Two fingers. All right, next man.
Ryan.
Hold it right there, Portry.
Well, I'm not armed, Ryan. Look. But you know why?
Too yellow, maybe.
Oh, the marshal's got my gun. I'm under arrest.
He's taking you in, is that it?
He was, till I woke up just now. I killed a man in Dodge, Ryan. They want to hang me for it.
Now, Baudry, we told you you'd get a fair trial.
Chester,
what's more?
Shut up.
Yes, sir.
Well, look, you haven't got much chance alone, Ryan. But you and me, we can disarm these men, throw away their guns, and ride off on those horses without the coach.
You do that, Baudry, and I'll quit my job and run you down if I have to chase you all the way to Oregon. I couldn't show up in Dodge after this anyway.
Well, I'll be watching for you, Marshal. It beats hanging. Well, how about it, Ryan?
Make a fool out of Dylan, huh? I'd like that. I pick up a gun, Baudry, and get over here.
I'm warning you, Baudry.
Sorry. I figure I'll live longer this way, Marshal.
Yeah, you hold the old man, Baudry. I want a free hand.
Yeah. I'll kill Gant quicker than Ryan would. Any of you men try anything?
You heard him. Now, let's get this over with. Fast.
Ryan, I want to tell you something.
That's far enough, Marshal. All that...
That gun in your hand, Ryan, you better keep it on me. You even glance at Baudry and I'll draw and kill you.
What are you talking about?
You shoot me and Baudry will kill you from behind.
What?
That's right, Ryan. Gant, you walk back over towards the hut so he can see I let you go.
He tricked you, too. But I can still kill you, Marshal.
Yeah, that's right, Ryan. You can still kill me. But I'm paid to die. I settled that in my mind when I took this job. It's only a matter of time. But what about you, Ryan? You ready to die?
You can't do this.
I'm doing it, Ryan. I'm doing it now. I'm going to walk right up to you, and you're going to give me that gun.
Stop, Marshal.
Don't. Your spine if you shoot, Ryan.
Let me have the gun, Ryan.
Easy, no. Ryan. Now!
Did he hit you, Mr. Dillon?
No, he waited a second too long.
It worked, Marshal. By golly, it worked.
Yeah. Yeah, you did fine, Baudry. I'm going to remember it.
Yeah.
Now give me back that gun.
You still going to take me in?
Of course.
No, that don't seem fair, Dylan.
I'm only a marshal, Baudry, not a judge.
Oh. I'm not sure I wouldn't rather die right here.
Wait, Baudry. Now, I'll testify at your trial, and I promise you it'll be a fair one, but that's all. Now, give me the gun.
You don't make it easy, Marshal.
My job's to bring you in. Any way I can get you there.
Dead or alive, huh?
That's right.
Here's the gun.
Thank you. The next day, I turned Chess Ryan over to the Army at Fort Donner. The colonel wanted credit for sending him back to California, and I wanted to be rid of him. Took us 3 days to ride back to Dodge. On the way, we got to be real good friends with Joe Baudry. I wouldn't let him have his gun back. But even so, he managed to supply us with antelope steaks every morning. I made him borrow Chester's gun.
Gunsmoke, transcribed under the direction of Norman McDonald, stars William Conrad as Matt Dillon, U.S. Marshal. Tonight's story was specially written for Gunsmoke by John Meston, with music composed and conducted by Rex Corey. Featured in the cast were Lawrence Dobkin and Lou Krugman, with Vic Perrin, Junius Matthews, Jim Nusser, and Ralph Moody. Parley Bear is Chester. Gunsmoke is heard by our troops overseas through the facilities of the Armed Forces Radio Service. Join us again next week as Matt Dillon, U.S. Marshal, fights to bring law and order out of the wild violence of the West in Gunsmoke. Clancy Cassell speaking. And remember, Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy open fire on your funny bone Sunday nights on the CBS Radio Network.
That's, as I say, one of the best westerns of the golden age of radio, Gunsmoke, from October 31st, 1952, Overland Express, starring William Conrad. And we had a very very nice listener text us in and say that William Conrad also played your great-uncle, Nero Wolfe.
Yes, my great-great-uncle, Nero Wolfe.
On television.
Although he has an E at the end of Wolfe.
This is true.
And
so,
I do
yeah.
not. So,
William
yeah.
Conrad did a lot of classic radio, and I hope you enjoyed that. Let's take a quick break. Then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater. Little Beatles. Right? Is that Lisa? Tax man. It's tax time.
Yes, it is.
Coming up.
It certainly is. Better get to work.
Yeah, well, I don't make any money, so I don't have to worry about
that. Are you going to release your taxes, the information?
Yeah, I really have nothing to hide in my taxes.
Yeah, that's what they all say.
when you make $14 in a year, that's all you have.
I think that's more than I've made.
They don't really tax you on $14.
Oh, no, they do.
Do they?
they do.
I think there's
you'll
a
end up with about
no, there's a certain 10. Amount, up to a certain amount of money. I don't think they tax you.
Mm-hmm. You keep thinking
that. Well, someone will text us in and let us know, somebody that does taxes for
my
a living.
My dad has been a tax man his whole life.
Your dad is an entrepreneur.
Well,
a serial entrepreneur.
That's one of his jobs.
I want to be your dad someday. Can
that
I?
That came out weird.
Can he clone me or can I be cloned?
You want to be my dad?
I
you
be
want to
like,
be my You want to be my dad?
I want to be like your dad. Your
oh,
dad.
It sounded like you
cool.
wanted to be my dad.
Her dad's like what? How old is he?
He's 81.
He's 81. Drives a Porsche.
He does.
Super cool guy.
Super cool. Super
like,
healthy. Super active.
Just,
super super great.
Flies all over. Has
I
a
talked
place
to him today.
Out in Florida.
You want to hear a true story really fast? I'll make it really short. He called me up today to have me order something for him on Amazon. They were screws for $5 and some odd change because I have Amazon Prime and he didn't want to pay for shipping. True story. That's how he saves his money.
Yeah.
So he doesn't have to pay the $2 shipping.
So he's not only cool, drives a Porsche, everything, he's smart.
He's
very smart.
Super funny.
And you have a connection to this next radio show, Phil
you know,
Harris and
my
Alice
mom's Faye. Name is Alice Faye, named after the Alice Faye.
Right.
Yep.
Wow.
That is her
so
name.
Hopefully they're listening and they can, they're probably not listening. Though.
They're in Florida.
Yeah. Then they're probably
so they're
not.
Probably sleeping.
Yeah.
But I don't blame them.
All right. So Phil Harris and Alice Faye coming your way in this hour, and then in our next hour, Box 13, all brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actress stars in the upcoming romantic drama 50 Shades Darker, the sequel to the 2015 film 50 Shades of Grey.
All right. What do they win?
The winner gets a pair of tickets to the Chicago Auto Show, courtesy of Fifth Third Bank.
Wow, those are nice tickets.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's
auto
gonna be a
show.
Lot of fun.
Very good. The number to call, 312-981-7200. And here's a hint. This actress played Anastasia in 50 Shades of Grey.
We have 2-inch and 1-inch. But the truly self-respecting handyman will have both in his toolbox.
Yes, he will. 312-981-7200. Who is this actress? And yes, I would date her. We'll find our winner after these words.
This is the WGN Radio Theater. We're playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play that one more time, please.
We have 2-inch and 1-inch. But the truly self-respecting handyman will have both in his toolbox.
And we're going to talk to Kelly from Chicago. Hi, Kelly.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Wonderful.
Good, good. Did you know that actress?
Absolutely. That's Dakota Johnson.
Dakota Johnson. She's got it right.
Va-va-va-voom.
Oh, Carl. Callie, we're going to give you a pair of tickets to the Chicago Auto Show, courtesy of Fifth Third Bank. It runs February 11th through the 20th. You can also register online to win a Navy Pier VIP experience. It's sponsored by Fifth Third Bank. Go to WGNradio.com/Fifth Third to enter to win before February 19th. Thank you so much for playing. We hope you enjoy the auto show. It's always a lot of fun there.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks,
Take care. Kelly. All right. It is time for the Phil Harris and Alice Faye Show. This was a comedy series starring singer bandleader Phil Harris and his real-life wife, actress and singer Alice Faye. Came to NBC Radio in 1948, and the two played fictionalized versions of themselves as a working showbiz couple raising two daughters. Elliot Lewis was Phil's best friend, guitar player Frankie Remley, who usually got Phil into hot water, and Walter Tetley, who played Leroy on The Great Gildersleeve. He was the obnoxious delivery boy Julius, and this series lasted until 1954. One of the best comedy series of the golden age of radio. Just laugh after laugh after laugh on this. This is an October 2nd, 1949 broadcast, and Frankie borrows Phil's new car on this show. Here's part one of the Phil Harris and Alice Faye Show.
Good health to all from Rexall. It's the Phil Harris, Alice Faye Show, presented by the makers of Rexall drug products and 10,000 independent Rexall family druggists. Good health to all from Rexall. And now your Rexall family druggist brings you the Phil Harris, Alice Faye Show. Written by Ray Singer and Dick Chevrolet, with Elliot Lewis, Walter Tetley, Robert North, Janine Roos, Ann Whitfield, Walter Sharp and his music, yours truly, Bill Foreman, and starring Alice Faye and Phil Harris. This morning, there seems to be a little excitement in the Harris household. Phil has gone out to the garage to get his car when suddenly he comes bursting back into the house.
Alice, something terrible has happened. Out of my way. Let me hit that phone.
Oh, take it easy, Phil. Calm down. What's wrong?
My car's been stolen. Call the police. Call the FBI. Get Sam Spade.
Phil, your car hasn't been stolen. Frankie borrowed it this morning.
Borrowed my new chartreuse Cadillac? I've only had it 2 weeks, and he's borrowed it 8 times already. How can that guy be so inconsiderate? How am I supposed to get downtown?
Oh, Frankie arranged for your transportation.
How?
He left you a transfer for the Hollywood bus.
Oh, gee whiz. Suppose he wrecks my car.
If you ask me, it'll look better in that condition. Why on earth did you buy a car with such an awful color scheme?
Get who's knocking chartreuse. To hear you talk, you'd think you never saw a chartreuse convertible with pale fudge fenders.
Philip, what made you get a chartreuse car?
He wanted something to match his shoes.
He has shoes that color?
Why, to hear you talk, you'd think you never saw chartreuse shoes with pale fudge tongues.
Philip, I don't know why you put up with Francis. He does the most awful things. Why, that man doesn't have one redeeming quality.
That ain't so. Remley's all right. Everybody has bad points. He just happens to have a higher score than anybody.
Frankie's always borrowing your car. He wrecked two of them last year, and, well, it makes me mad.
Well, I don't mind too much. Why should it make you mad?
Because I can't afford to keep buying you new ones. Maybe it'd be cheaper if I bought Frankie a car.
Hold it, Luella. I ain't gonna have my wife buying some other guy a car. I'll buy him one.
With what?
I'll pay for it out of my mad money. let him go down and pick out a cheap used car for himself.
Phil, you know Frankie won't pick out a cheap used car for himself. He'll pick out the best new one on the market.
No, he won't. Not the way I'm going to handle it. With my plan, I'll guarantee he'll be the one to suggest a used car. I'll tell him it's for you and that I'm... Wait a minute, I'll get it. Hiya, Curly. Well, good morning, Mr. Remley. Nice of you to return my car.
Who's returning it? I ran out of gas. I came back to get your credit card.
Remley, you ain't getting no credit card. And furthermore, I want you to stop driving my car, and that's final.
That's okay with me. I wouldn't drive it again anyway until you had it repainted. That awful chartreuse color is affecting my social life.
Frankie, it's a beautiful greenish yellow.
Yeah, that's the trouble. It looks like an unripe taxi.
Now, look here, Remley.
Every time I stop to pick up a girl, she jumps in and yells, "Follow that cab!"
Now, listen, I'm not going to stand...
I don't mind that, but the ticking of the meter is making me nervous.
Well, I don't care if... What meter?
The one I had put in this morning, so it shouldn't be a total loss. Gee, Curly, I don't know...
Will you call a cab? I have to go downtown.
Excuse me, Curly, I got a customer. Get in, lady. Oh!
Oh, hello, Frank.
Oh, Alex.
Phil, did you tell him about buying the car?
What car?
No, honey, I haven't had a chance to tell him that. I have... No, he just came in.
What car?
Well, it's a car. You see, I'm going to buy a new car for someone very close to me.
Oh, gee, Curly, that's sweet of you. I don't know what to say, except let's get over to the Cadillac agency and pick one out for me.
Just a minute, Remley. This car don't happen to be for you. You see, I'm buying the car for Alice.
Alice? But I'm the one who needs it. Why does she... Oh, well, that's life. Money goes to money. Them who has, gets.
And Frankie,
You
know, you have such excellent taste. I'd appreciate it if you'll help Phil pick a car for me, will you?
Okay, but my heart won't be in it.
Oh, thanks, Frankie. Well, I have to run along now. See you later.
Fine thing. I need a car myself, and I gotta go help buy one for somebody else.
Oh, Frankie, don't feel that way about it. Look, I'll tell you what. If there's any money left after buying Alice's car, I'll give it to you, and you can buy one of your own.
If there's any money left over, I can have it?
Yeah. Now let's go down and pick out a nice new car for Alice.
New car? I got a better idea. Let's get her a used car.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe a good used car will be all right. But, where can I find a reliable used car dealer?
I know a guy.
I figured you would. Look, Remley, I got $300 to spend, and I don't want to be gypped. Now, is this guy you know, is he honest?
Please, Curly. I'll thank you not to cast any aspersions on Hot Heap Harrigan.
Hot Heap Harrigan. Is he the guy who used to be with Nothing Down Brown?
Gentlemen.
Well, in that case, okay. Let's go see him. Come on.
I better go see Hot Heap alone, Curly.
Why?
Well, he doesn't like strangers. Being a typical used car salesman, he's shy and reticent. Besides, if I go alone, I can get a better price from him.
Okay. Now, here's the $300, but remember, Remley, pick out something nice for Alice. Something...
Well, something you yourself would like. Now, don't try to save anything.
Well, you know me better than that. I'll pick out the best used car they got for Alice.
I'll see you soon.
Little does he realize that the automobile he is picking for Alice is in reality for himself. Well, now that I've reset the plot, I think I'll sing. I got my Sunday best on, going strutting with my Lola Belle Lee. She's waiting for me, and I'll be there, I declare, with an hour to spare. And when we're walking arm in arm down the boulevard, ooh, golly, I'm proud. Have a look at that crowd. Hey, pop, call the cop, or the traffic will stop, 'cause she's so, so, so adorable, my Laura Belle Lee.
His heart's desire,
my bundle of gosh, oh, gee. So don't blame me for highfalutin', it got my horn out, and I'm a-tootin', it bust each button when I'm out strutting with my Laura Belle Lee.
That's why he is looking like a million. He's got that million-dollar glow. He's stepping out.
I've got my Sunday best on, going strutting with my Laura Belle Lee. She's waiting for me, and I'll be there, I declare, with an hour to spare. We pass the corner where the boys always hang around. They give her the eye as we're going by. That's fine, that's the sign that they know that she's mine.
We all agree that she's adorable, your Laura Belle Lee. All that a girl might be.
Yes, take my word, I got the best of it. One good look will tell the rest of it.
I'll keep pitching, 'cause I'll be hitching to my Laura Belle Lee.
Bill, suppose Frankie doesn't like the car when he finds out it's for him and not for me.
Honey, he's got to like it. He can't complain because he's picking it out himself. That's where my scheme is infallible. Infallible! Oh, Philip, watch that pretty mouth of yours. Them $9 words are pouring out promiscuously. Whoops, there I go again.
What kind of a car he picks. He has such awful taste. I can't imagine.
Uh-oh, that must be him now. Hold it. Come in.
Well, I got you an automobile, and it's a beauty. Come on outside. I'll show it to you. Well, you see it, Alice. And I got a good deal on it, too.
Remley.
Hmm?
Did you spend the whole $300?
Well, not quite. I have a little change left over.
How much change?
$275.
So you bought a car for, I did the math in my head, Lisa,
yeah.
$25.
That's a deal.
Man, not bad. All right, Phil Harris and Alice Faye from October 2nd, 1949. We'll get back to it in a few minutes here on the WGN Radio Theater. All right, welcome to Sunday. This is a Sunday, Lisa.
This is a Sunday.
Yeah. All right.
Okay.
We'll be back here tonight at 11 p.m. Lisa gets here like 30 seconds before airtime.
Well, then that's 30 seconds earlier than I needed
to be here.
She
pushes her way through and says, give me my notes. She like,
you guys work it all out.
She barks at Ella, put my computer on.
Yeah.
She barks at her.
Yeah.
Ruff.
I'm mean. Ruff. Yeah, we don't get along at all.
Elif and put my computer on.
Elif and I just fight like cats and dogs.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm the cat. She's the dog.
That's right. I fight with Roger and I fight with
I didn't know it was
Carl.
The Steve Dale show. Yeah. You got all these pets down there.
Yeah.
What's going on?
I just fight with everyone.
I'm auditioning for the part of like the guy who does the animal voices in the next radio drama over at Museum of Broadcast Communications.
Yeah.
Does
it. There you go.
How about that?
You got it.
All right.
You nailed it.
Good job.
Meow.
Yeah, we're putting you up for
yeah,
adoption.
That's perfect. I don't know if he's going to have any luck finding a home, Roger.
Well, nobody would adopt me.
I mean, he's cute on the outside, but once you get to know him.
come on.
Back to the kennel for you.
At least he's paper trained, you know?
Well, I don't know, Roger. That's a big assumption.
You know him better than I do.
I'm not that well.
Yeah, and all I eat is kibbles and bits, so Ooh. It's all, you know.
Oh, gosh.
All right. Well, thanks, Roger.
You're welcome. You were doing so good. You know, we're turning everyone else away.
Will you vote for me for the role of the sound effects
sure.
voiceover guy?
And of course.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate
I will not.
That.
Put a little reverb on you, too,
yeah.
just a tad.
He needs a little help.
Are you enjoying this Phil Harris and Alice Faye
you
show?
You know, of all the comedies, Jack Benny can't beat that.
Right.
But I've always loved Phil Harris.
Yeah, I know.
Always.
So great.
And when he got his own show, I mm-hmm. mean, you know, it's just, it made him a star on his own.
Yeah.
So, again, one of my top comedy shows from radio.
Yeah, you know, I interviewed Phil Harris, you know, many, many years ago and mm-hmm. probably a few years before he passed away. And I don't think he really wanted to do the interview. He wasn't exactly up for it, if you know what I mean.
Uh-huh.
He was kind of like, you know, when you do those interviews and they give you like one word answers.
Yeah.
And you're like, so what was it like, you know, doing the Phil Harris and Alice Faye show? Yeah, good. You know, pretty much.
Yikes.
But it was still cool to talk to Phil Harris, you know.
Yeah.
Got to talk to him. And actually, George Burns set that up for me.
Oh,
so,
really?
Yeah, set that interview up for me.
Look at you.
Yeah. It was fun interviewing
him. I'm
very
impressed.
Phil Harris and Alice Faye, he was, of course, the longtime band leader on the Jack Benny program and then spun off into his own show. There was a few spinoffs of Jack Benny. You know the other one?
The singer.
That's right, Dennis Day.
Dennis Day had
Dennis
his own
Day show. There was another one, too.
Oh, wait a minute.
You know the other spinoff?
On the Jack Benny show?
Well, yeah, another one of his cast members spun off and had his own radio show.
I'm trying to remember now.
The Man of a Thousand Voices.
Oh,
Mel Blanc.
Mel Blanc.
Yeah, the Mel Blanc.
He had his own show.
The Mel Blanc Fix It Shop.
I'll be
yeah.
a son of a gun.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you about the Dennis Day. It was the weirdest thing.
Mm-hmm.
What's My Line?
Mm-hmm.
There was a rerun on the other night.
And he was on?
And he was the mystery guest.
Really?
And doing, trying to, you know, confuse them with different voices.
Right.
And they mentioned Dennis Day's own radio show.
Yeah.
During that
A
What's
Day
My
in
Life?
The Life of Dennis Day was the name of the radio show. Yeah.
Very cool.
Well, very good. I tell you, Roger knows his stuff, man.
He's I think I've forgotten more than I remember.
No, you're very good with this stuff. Very, very good. All right. Let's get back to it. The Phil Harris and Alice Faye Show.
Paid $25 for a car. What kind
Don't
of...
Don't knock it till you see it. Well, Alice, here's your car. Ain't she a knockout?
Frankie.
Notice how low slung she is.
Frankie.
You'll be proud to drive a sleek, streamlined job like this.
Frankie. You...
What?
That's the pile of cans Phil put out this morning.
You sure? Could have sworn I parked it here. Oh, there it is, over there.
Where?
The big pile. The one leaning up against the garbage can. The one with the celery sticking up this the garbage can. The program was transcribed for earlier broadcast.
A wreck like that.
What's the matter? Don't you like it?
I guess it's all right, but isn't it kind of tired looking? Why is it lying down?
It's relaxing. When you get as old as that car, you'll sneak a short nap every chance you get to.
It's not an old car. May not be brand new, but it's built better than the cars of today. It's got fine material in it. Just look at the isinglass and that windshield. And it comes with a lot of extras. Goggles, duster, and a spare set of candles for the headlights.
Has it got a radio?
Radio. It's got something better than that. It has a console with a three-way combination. Crystal set, gramophone, and stereopticon slot.
And these are...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let me see them records.
Yeah, here you are.
Nice set of cylinders. Good tunes, too. Oh, Susanna, Camp Town Races. Here's a cutesy, honey, because I don't think this will make it.
Your feeble attempt at humor is quite pathetic. Alice, aren't you happy with this car?
Would you be happy with it?
I've dreamed of having a car like this all my life. Wouldst that I could afford it.
You couldst.
What?
Remley, I got news for you. This is your car. I bought it for you, not Alice.
For me? You mean this beautiful car I picked out for Alice is the junk heap you bought for me?
There she lays, Rob, and she's all yours.
I ought to punch you right in the nose.
Well, it's your own fault, Frankie. Bill gave you $300 to buy a car, but you had to chisel and buy one for $25. You made your bet, now you'll have to sleep in it.
I don't feel bad enough she's got to come up with a corny expression like that. I ain't going to keep this scrap pile.
Well, that's all you're going to get. Now, if you don't like it, sell it to somebody else at a profit and buy yourself a better one.
Who can I get to buy this heap?
I know a guy.
Now he's stealing my character. How low can a man get? Alice, I don't know how you live with this man. Are you in love with him?
Of course I am.
Ah, you're just saying that. Come, girl, you can confide in me. What do you really think of him?
Well, if you must know, I'll tell you.
I like the lead to my song much better, and I work alone. I don't know.
I'm as corny as Kansas in August. I'm as normal as blueberry pie. No more a smart little girl with no heart. I have found me a wonderful guy. I am in a conventional dither with a conventional star in my eye. And you will note there's a lump in my throat when I speak of that wonderful guy. I'm as bright and as gay as a daisy in May, a cliche coming true. I'm bromidic and bright as the moon. Happy night pouring light on the dew.
She's as corny as Kansas in August. High as a flag on the 4th of July.
If you'll excuse an expression I use, I'm in love, I'm in love, I'm in love, I'm in love, I'm in love with a wonderful guy.
She's as bright and as gay as a daisy in May, a cliche coming true. She's romantic and bright as a moon, happy night pouring light on the dew.
I'm as corny as Kansas in August. High as a flag on the 4th of July. If you'll excuse an expression I use, I'm in love, I'm in love, I'm in love, I'm in love, I'm in love with a wonderful guy.
All I did was ask her what she thought of. She could have said, I like them, but no, she had to make a production out of it, going with 2-minute song.
Hey, look, Frankie, forget about that. Now, look, I've been thinking it over. Now, if you don't like the car, you don't have to keep it. Take it back to the guy you bought it from and get the money.
I can't do that. The guy's no longer alive.
What are you talking about? You just bought the car from him an hour ago.
I know. When I told him I'd take it, he dropped dead.
Well, anyway, he collapsed.
Fell down.
You know, Remley, come to think of it, now just quiet down a minute. This car doesn't look too bad.
Well, maybe it doesn't.
Well, if it has a good motor, you can have the body fixed up and then it'll be okay.
Hey, what's that dead moose doing in the street?
Julius, this ain't no dead moose. My new automobile.
This is an automobile? Where did you get this monstrosity?
It's not a monstrosity. This automobile happens to be a family heirloom. My grandfather handed it down to my father.
Well, old Butterfingers must have dropped it.
Although it's an heirloom and very dear to me, I'm going to sell this automobile.
Are you kidding? Who'll buy this monstrosity?
Stop calling it a monstrosity.
I will if you stop calling it an automobile.
Look, kid, even though this heirloom's worth a lot of money, I'm forced to sell it at a sacrifice. And since you're the dearest friend I got, I want you to have it. It's worth $3,000, but if you make me a reasonable offer, it's yours.
You mean you're willing to sell me this valuable family heirloom? It's worth $3,000 and you're willing to let me have it at a sacrifice?
That's right. What's your top offer?
$1.35.
You're offering me $1.35 for this beautiful car?
I started too high, huh?
Look, kid. This is a good buy. It's got a wonderful engine.
Do tell. What does it run on, steam or batteries?
Now, don't be a wise guy. It's a modern engine. It's economical to run. It don't use much fuel.
How much mileage can I get?
Well, the last guy who had it got as much as 50 miles to one cord of wood.
It burns wood?
You can use charcoal if you want.
Just think, you'll be the only kid at school with a charcoal broiled Essex.
Buick, do you?
Look, son, this is a great buy. Come on, we'll take you for a ride. Julius, you start the motor.
Okay, where's the crank?
You don't need a crank for this car.
Of course not. It's a cinch to start this motor. You see that slot, Julius, on the side of the hood?
Yeah, what about it?
Here's the key. Wind it up.
What are you trying to do, kill my sale? No, this car has a self-starter. I'll show you. Something seems to be wrong with the motor.
Choke it.
Keep quiet, kid. I'll try it again. Hey, she started. Why is the motor coughing?
Maybe it's got an allergy. Now put it in gear and let's get going.
Okay. Fighting me. Fighting me. It won't go. There. Hey, Curly, it's moving. What happened?
I must have kicked one of the galley slaves. Come on, Julius, quick, get in. Ain't you coming with us?
No, thanks. One of us has got to stay alive for the inquest.
Hey, Remley, we're picking up speed. Hey, it's all downhill. Hey, you better brake it a little. Watch where you're driving.
If you don't like the way I'm driving, you take the wheel.
Frankie, put that wheel back on the shaft. Hey, we're heading for that store when to stop the car.
I'm trying to.
Look out, duck, Remley, duck!
I gotta have these brakes rewind. To me. Say something. Curly, are you all right?
Oh, yeah. I always ride with my head between my knees like that. Remley, look at that mess you've made out of that store window. You've broken everything and... Uh-oh. Here comes the owner.
Well, do you gentlemen wish to be waited on?
No, thank you. We're just browsing.
What's the idea of smashing in here like this? What happened?
Well, we were window shopping and we overdid it.
You'll pay for this. I'll sue you for every penny you've got. I'll take you
now, wait a minute,
court.
Mister. I don't want any trouble. It's not our fault. I'll pay for any damage we've done. Now, how much do I owe you?
$1,500, and you're not leaving here till I get the money.
But I haven't got $1,500 on me. Where am I going to get it?
Don't worry, Curly. I'll get it. I feel partly responsible for this accident. I know a guy who'll let me have $1,500. Loan me your car so I can drive over and get it.
All right, here are the keys, but hurry, Remley, will you? Hurry.
$1,300, $1,400, $1,500. There you are, mister.
Okay. Now you can go, Harris.
Oh, Frankie, you're a lifesaver. I don't know what I would have done if you didn't get that $1,500.
That's all right, Curly. You know me. I'll do anything for a pal.
What a day. What a day. Now, come on. Let's get in my car and go home. Where'd you park it?
What's on that lot on the corner of 5th and Main?
Well, let's go on over there and get... Hey, wait a minute. That's a used car lot.
Of course. Where do you think I got the $1,500?
Oh.
You know, Phil, you were lucky to get your car back from that used car lot.
I certainly wasn't. Remley, you ain't going to bar it no more. You got your own car now. Anytime you want it, just go down to the grocery and take it out of the window.
I already got it out. I gave it to my aunt as a present.
Your aunt don't drive. What's she going to do with it?
She's having it wired. She's going to make a lamp out of it.
This program is produced and directed by Paul Phillips. Included in today's cast were Ruth Davis and Herb Biker. The part of Frankie Remley was played by Elliot Lewis, and Julius was played by Walter Tetley. Alice Faye appeared through the courtesy of 20th Century Fox.
Stay tuned for The Adventures of Sam Spade, which follows immediately on NBC.
That's the Phil Harris and Alice Faye Show, October 2nd, 1949, starring Phil Harris and Alice Faye. Also, Elliot Lewis in there, Herb Vigran, Jeanine Roos. And we heard Robert North, Walter Scharf and his orchestra, Walter Tetley. Big cast. This was originally sponsored by Rexall, as heard on NBC. Hope you enjoyed the Phil Harris and Alice Faye Show. Let's take a quick break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. Saturday, but it's Sunday, actually.
It's okay.
In the park.
I think it was the 4th of July.
You think it was?
I think it
fireworks was. Should be going off then. Hour 3.
Saturday,
in the park.
I think it was the 4th of
Lisa's
July.
Lisa's a good singer. Go ahead, Lisa. Take
no,
it.
I can't now.
Take it, Lisa.
I can't do it. I'll get chastised.
I wish I could play a musical instrument. I can't. I have no musical abilities whatsoever. Can't sing.
Well, you took all of your abilities and you put it in one big lump.
Yeah.
And you focus it
calling
on
me
classic
a lump?
Radio.
She's calling me a lump.
No, your abilities are all in one area, which is a good area.
Yeah.
And you're a great baseball player.
Well.
And you're a good juggler.
Keep going.
And ping pong player.
Whoa, yeah.
Yep, see? Yeah. There you go. That's
you know,
a lot of talent.
I hear there's a rumor going around that Bill Leff is a quite a ping pong player.
Yeah, I know you challenged
him. He's a very
him.
Good tennis player, too.
Is he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of the you same
know,
thing.
Guys
table
that play tennis.
Tennis
are usually good at
table tennis.
See, now where I can't play tennis.
Why not?
But I will kick his
what?
Rear at ping pong. I'm just saying that right now. I'm just putting it out there.
You've challenged him.
Challenged
I'll
him.
Kick your
oh, the gauntlet has been thrown.
Don't even. Elif's over here telling me she's going to beat me at ping pong.
Wait.
Oh, yeah, you wait.
Come on. But I hear Bill's quite the ping pong player. I'm
gonna
challenging
have to set
him.
Set that up.
I think we should do it over at Spin, right down the block, as soon as it's Herandon's place. I will. I challenge Bill Leff.
You've challenged him already. You can't challenge him again.
Folks, if you
listen... wants to make sure Bill hears it. He's sleeping
he's not
right
listening.
Yeah.
Yeah,
he's sleeping.
But, you know, here's the thing. It'll really irk him
Why?
If our listeners, you know, really razzmatazz them a little bit, right?
Call them during the show.
Yeah. I think do this for, it'll be fun, folks. Yeah. I think, you know, it's like, remember Fred Allen and Jack Benny? They had that friendly feud. And they were good buddies.
Sure.
And Bill is a good buddy. But you know what? I am going to just mop the floor with him at ping pong. It's not going to.
All right. So
if he gets, if he gets 10 points off me. I'll consider him the winner. 10 right. points. That's all he's got to get.
So we've on Monday. So everybody who's listening.
I don't know about
now,
wait. Maybe I
you
should
have a handicap there.
I might put a back off on that.
Wait,
one,
but why?
No, that's all right. No. Just straight up ping
just
pong.
You'll beat him.
You know what?
You'll
I'll talk directly to Bill about it.
No, I think it'd be better for
have the listeners call Monday after 10 o'clock.
Oh, will you listen? Right. Listen to to Roger.
Go easy on me.
Roger knows what he's talking about.
Have him call and text. Monday, they come on at 10, and they're on from 10 to noon.
Don't argue with the man behind the curtain.
I don't argue with Roger. I argue with you.
I think our listeners should definitely razz him a little bit. Yeah. Say Carl was really talking about how he was
talking
just,
smack.
He was smacking you. Yeah, right? Yeah, that's what we're going to do. All right, so that'll be fun. And then, you know, Roger, maybe you can be the moderator or something or the judge, you know.
I'll be the net judge.
Yeah, the net
judge. I'll sit
up
on my high chair there. Mm-hmm. And I'll call it, and then who's going to be the angry player, you or Bill?
I'll be like the McEnroe.
Yeah.
I'll be John McEnroe.
Okay, you can be McEnroe, and right. I'll call net, and you could like scream and yell.
I'll throw my paddle at
you. Throw your paddle at me.
Yeah.
Sounds okay.
good. All right.
I like it.
And we should videotape it, Ellis.
Oh, yeah.
Videotape.
And play it on the Bill and Wendy show and also on our show. Okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
And, you know, and when he's crying at the end, he's crying like a little girl.
This is going down
he's
fast.
Crying because I mopped the floor with him.
Oh my gosh!
You know,
hey, when you win, you're going to jump the net.
Yeah, but he
might trip a little bit, but
then he'll challenge me at tennis and he'll just cremate me.
Yeah,
but not at ping pong.
Oh. All right, we heard you.
All right, so there we go. Made it official. On the air live.
What?
In this hour, it's Box 13. Alan Ladd, you're going to love it. It's all brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actor plays a mercenary soldier who fights mythical beasts in the upcoming historical fiction film.
Beasts.
Excuse me?
Beasts. That's what it sounded like. You fed.
This actor plays a mercenary soldier who fights mythical beasts in the upcoming historical fiction film, The Great Wall.
312, thou ate what?
That's not funny.
7200.
You are going to offend people. And the winner gets a Twilight Zone 4-CD set hosted by Stacey Keach.
All right. So if you know who what the answer is, you'll win some Twilight Zone CDs. 312-981-7200. This actor played astronaut Mark Watney in The Martian.
So, I got to figure out a way to grow 3 years' worth of food here.
All right, give us a call if you know who that is. 312-981-7200. We'll find the beef winner after these words.
All right. Well, you pointed to me, so I'm very excited to give away a Twilight Zone 4 CD set. We have
to play
that clip one more time.
So, I got to figure out a way to grow 3 years' worth of food here.
And we have Howard on the line from Milwaukee. Hi, Howard.
Hello. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Thank you.
Good. Good to hear from you. And we're hoping you recognize that actor's voice.
Matt Damon
is right, and we're going to give you a Twilight Zone 4 CD set.
Excellent.
The Twilight Zone audio dramas are fantastic. You're going to love them. They're hosted by Stacey Keach, who is wonderful on them. So we hope you appreciate that.
Thank you. We do.
We all do, right?
Right.
Terrific.
Thanks a lot, Howard. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. Enjoy your Twilight Zone CDs. Okay, Lisa, it's time now for Box 13. It was a great mystery adventure show, and it starred movie star Alan Ladd. He played Dan Halliday. He was a retired newspaper man turned fiction writer, and to gain ideas for his books, He ran an ad in the Star Times newspaper that read, "Adventure Wanted. We'll go anywhere, do anything. Write Box 13. And Holliday responded, and he was off on another adventure. His secretary was Sylvia Picker. She was like a scatterbrain, you know, sort of like...
Sound like me, yeah.
You know, yeah, a little kooky. Produced by Alan Ladd's Mayfair Productions, which also produced Damon Runyon Theater. We talked about that earlier. Ladd starred and produced and even wrote some of these episodes. This is a good one. It is called Speed to Burn. It stars Alan Ladd. Here's part one now of Box 13.
Box 13 with Alan Ladd as Dan Holliday.
Box 13, care of the Star Times. I've read your advertisement asking for adventure. I think this will be it. I'm asking you to solve an impossible situation, but one that must be solved. Next Wednesday, drive out on Route 36 at exactly noon. You'll come to a 5-mile speedometer check. Maintain a speed of 72 miles an hour over the distance. You will be passed by a 1938 car going 100 miles per hour. The car will sound its horn. When you hear it, pull over to the side and stop.
When you hear it, pull over to the side and stop. The letter had no signature, but it sounded intriguing. And it became even more so as time went on. That is, what little time there was.
A 100 miles an hour? Mr. Holliday, that's dangerous.
Yes, it is, Susie. That's what makes this letter so interesting. I'd like to see a 1938 model do 100.
Why? Isn't it possible?
Possible, yes, but not probable.
Why not?
Susie, in the course of time, things wear out. Even a car has to give up sometime.
Oh, the letter isn't signed.
And that's another thing that tells me to take this on. An unsigned letter, a 1938 car doing 100 turn, an impossible situation that has to be solved. Now, I ask you, Susie, wouldn't that make anyone pick up his ears? At exactly noon that Wednesday, I turned into Highway 36, a long, level stretch of concrete that rimmed out in front of my car, just asking to be burned up. I looked at my speedometer. The needle hung at 60. Up ahead, I saw the first sign on the road shoulder. The sign read, "Start speedometer check here." I stepped on the accelerator and watched the needle pass 60 and move to 65, 68, then 70. Just as the nose of my car pushed over the start of check run. In my rearview mirror, the road in the back was clear. No cars, no traffic at all. I hit 72 miles per hour and stayed there. The road slipped by underneath, and the scenery on the side was a flashing blur of color. Then I looked in my rearview mirror again, and suddenly there it was. A car that ate up the distance between us as though we were attached by some invisible elastic that pulled us together. And then before I knew it... It was past me. I pulled up and stopped. Ahead, the car that passed me slowed down, and it also stopped. Then turned around and came back toward me.
Hello.
Hello there.
Hello. You're Box 13?
That's right. And you're the only jet plane pilot I know with no license.
Thank you for coming.
Not at all. I enjoyed every second of it. Hey, what do you feed that car of yours?
May I get in your car?
Oh, please do.
Thank you. I've taken a big chance in doing this, Mr.
Dan Holliday.
My name is Nancy. Nancy Peters.
That is a 1938 model you're driving. And from the looks of it, it's only a 6-cylinder job.
Yes, but I haven't much time. I'll have to talk fast.
Oh, all right, go ahead.
I want you to help my brother.
Is he the impossible situation you mentioned in your letter?
Yes. He has a prison record. And now he's mixed up in something he can't get away from. Will you help?
Oh, now, just a minute, Miss Peters. Your car may do 100 without batting a carburetor, but I work a little slower. Before I do any helping, I'd like to know the three W's. Who, what, and where.
Oh, I told you. It's my brother.
That answers the who part. Now, how about what and where?
Stolen cars. That's the what.
One like yours?
That has something to do with it.
Go ahead.
Tom's mixed up in a stolen car syndicate.
Syndicate? It's a business now, huh?
Bigger than anyone realizes.
Why doesn't he get her?
He can't. He's watched night and day. Sometimes I am, too. He didn't know what he was getting into till it was too late.
All right, I'll buy that for now. But it'll take more explanation.
Look, let's go somewhere else and talk. I just wanted to know if you'd be interested.
Well, that car of yours intrigues me. Where do you want to go?
Follow me.
If you promise not to do any stunt flying, I'll be right in back of you. More coffee, Miss Peters?
No, thanks. Are you interested, Mr. Holliday?
Yes.
All right. The syndicate looks like a legitimate business, but it's not. It's tied up with stolen car rackets in every city in the country.
In which case, it's an item for the police or better for the FBI. I suggest you go to them.
I can't do that. My brother would be sent back to prison.
Well, then let him quit.
One man tried it. He was killed.
How do you know?
Tom told me. Mr. Holliday, I don't know who's at the head of the syndicate. I don't know anything about it, but you can find out and help Tom.
And how do I do this?
Will you do it?
Well, I don't know, Miss Peters. Tell me, how did your brother get into this racket?
He's a mechanic. He started to work at the Acme filling station, and it wasn't long before he was offered a job as a mechanic in a big garage in town. Before he knew it, he was in the racket and afraid to go to the police.
Did he try?
Once. Then he saw he was followed. He didn't try again. Not after the other man was killed.
What can I do?
Get a job at the Acme filling station. It was from there that Tom went to the syndicate.
Now, look, Miss Peters, your brother's a mechanic. I'm not. I know just about enough to repair minor injuries. That's all.
That's enough. They need men. The syndicate's getting bigger.
And you want me to increase the organization by one, namely Dan Holliday.
I'll pay you $1,000 if you do.
Oh, no, I don't want any money. This Acme filling station, where is it?
12902 Braddock Road.
All right, I'll see what I can do, but no promises. Meanwhile, how do I get in touch with you?
Here's my name, address, and telephone number.
Okay, Miss Peters. But like I said, no promises. I'd just like to nose around first and see what trouble I can get into. I left Nancy Peters and drove back to the city, got into some old clothes, and took a bus out to Braddock Road. The Acme filling station did business on a three-way corner. From what I could see, it was a good business. I watched for a while until I spotted a man I thought was the boss. I waited until business cooled off a little, then walked over to him.
Hello. Do something for you?
I don't know. Depends on how badly you need help here.
Help? You looking for a job?
Yeah, yes, I am.
I saw you standing on the opposite corner looking over here. Thought maybe you was planning a holdup.
No, thanks. That's getting money the hard way. But I saw you hopping around here and figured you could use some help.
I don't know. Know anything about cars?
Oh, a little.
Enough to do minor repairs?
Sure.
Let me see your hands. Hold them out.
Huh?
Just hold them out. You ain't done much hard work in your life, have you?
Oh, well, not recently, no.
Well, don't think I can use you, bud.
But I need a job.
Try someplace else.
Okay. I was just asking.
What's the matter?
Got a phone here. I want to make a call.
Huh? Inside, why?
I just want to make a call, that's all.
Okay, inside, I told you.
It was a hunch, and I played it. The car that drove up was a police car, and I pretended to be afraid of it. I waited inside until the car drove out. Then the boss came in.
Make your call okay?
Yeah, sure.
Mm-hmm. You had to make that call all of a sudden, didn't you?
I just thought of it.
Oh, sure.
I'll see you later.
Wait a minute. Sit down.
What for?
Maybe we can talk. Wait a second.
What's the idea of closing the door?
We can talk better. Why'd you do a fade when you saw that police car?
I didn't see any police car.
Quit kidding, bub. You saw it coming and pulled that phony call routine. You hot?
Look, all I did was ask you for a job. Thanks for your time and so long.
Now, take it easy. Sit down again. What's your name?
Make it Holliday, Dan Holliday.
That sounds phony enough. Want a job?
A minute ago, you were tight about that. Now you loosen up. Why?
I like to help people.
Uh-huh. Got a kind face.
You want a job or not?
Doing what?
Handling the pumps, working on the grease rack, lubrication, wash rack, maybe doing some repair work now and then. How about it?
Sounds like a full-time job.
That's what you want, isn't it?
Yeah, it's exactly what I want.
Yeah, pick up some coveralls in the lockers out back. You start as of now.
So I went to work. And I learned about cars. I rented a room near the station at night, read books on automotive repairs. And I waited. Waited for the next move, which came one morning just after I'd reported for work.
Holiday. Hey, Dan.
Yeah?
Come inside a minute, will you?
Right away. Pull the door shut. What's the trouble?
No trouble at all. You know, you're getting to be a pretty good mechanic.
Well, I learned fast.
There's not quite enough work around here for a good mechanic. I thought maybe you'd like to make more dough.
Do I get a raise?
Not from me. But I can send you to somebody who needs mechanics. Needs them bad.
Thanks. Who's the guy and where is he?
You go to 714 South Elm, to the Southern Auto Works. Here, give him this card.
So, you're the guy Marty sends along, huh?
That's right. He gave me this card to give you.
Yeah. Okay. My name is Mike. Follow me.
Sure. Kind of busy in here, aren't you?
We keep going. Hey, this way.
I can see why Marty says you need mechanics.
Yeah, he can always use a good one. People crack up their cars or do a million things. Here, go in this door. Good luck, fella.
Have a chair, Holiday. So you're a mechanic.
Well, that's what Marty says.
And you live at 678 Bender Avenue and you do a lot of reading at night. I know a lot about you, Dan, more than you think I do.
Like what?
Like the fact that you're a little shy of cops.
I'm not afraid of them.
I didn't say that. I said shy. Say like a guy who's just put in a little time would be. And don't be afraid, Dan. There's nothing to be afraid of.
Look, I took the job at Marty's place because I needed it. But I don't have to be needled by you or anybody else. Maybe I did a stretch. And again, maybe I didn't. It's got nothing to do with the job. So long, Mr. Swanson.
Stay right where you are.
What's your idea?
No idea, Dan. I'm just in need of good mechanics. Marty tells me you're pretty good. Not top-notch, but good enough. Okay, you want a job here?
Doing what?
Automotive repairs. What else?
That's what I asked. What else?
My, you're suspicious. Look, you can take the job or not as you like. Pay is 75 a week on a percentage basis for anything over that in time and work.
I'd look like a chump if I turned that down.
That's right. So I guess you're in, huh?
Like you say, Mr. Swanson, I'm in.
He's going to pay him $75 a week back in 1949. That's pretty good money. I'd take that.
I was going to say, I'd like that right now. I'd take it and run.
$14 for the whole year I made last
year. Look, 6 hours a week we work here, $75. That's fair pay.
All right. Let's take a quick break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. Rock that Casbah. Would you, Lisa?
I will. I'm rocking it as we speak.
All right. 1:35. Thanks, Roger. This is the WGN Radio Theater here every Saturday and Sunday night, bringing you the best from radio's golden age, the 1930s, 40s, 50s. These radio shows, they reign supreme in the lives of men and women who were in America during this era. It was very important because they didn't have a television, and really just newspapers and radio were their sources of entertainment. They didn't really go to movies as much as like we do now. They went to a movie maybe once every 2 months.
Well, they were expensive.
You know, they would turn on the radio. Yeah. Radio was free, and they were able to listen to these radio dramas, fully dramatized theater of the mind. And we've collected over 100,000 shows, licensed most of them. And we play them here every Saturday and Sunday night on this legendary station. Almost 50, let's see, this is a 50,000 watt station, and it's heard in about 40 states at night. So when we're broadcasting right now, the signal reaches out there, most of the country, parts of Canada, and it even reaches Elif in the studio there. She could even hear it.
I hear it all the way these few yards away from you.
All the way these. I think Elif hears it in her sleep at this point.
Speaking of sleep, yes. Elif needs some sleep. She's a little tired in there, I can tell. She's like... She was snoring.
Don't throw me under the bus like that.
No, I won't. What's the weather like down there? We also have a podcast. Hang on. We have a podcast. Did you know like that, Lisa? Did you know that?
Did I know that we have a podcast? Well, I post the podcast.
You know, I don't. I got to tell you, I talk to a lot of our listeners, and they say stuff like, you know, I'm able to hear the first or second hour, but then I fall asleep. And then I say, oh, you know, we have a podcast. They go, what? You have a podcast?
We sure do.
Yeah, we must talk about that more.
Well, Elif puts it together, posts it on WGN radio, and then I post it as well on WGN Radio Theater Facebook. Mm, so there's a lot of places you can find it, and you find it a different place as well.
Yeah.
So Carl goes to Google and types in WGN Radio Theater and the number of the show. So this is 151. Elif posted on WGN Radio on the website. You can go to podcast right there for us. And then I take that and I post it right on the WGN Radio Theater Facebook page. So there's all sorts of ways.
It's a lot
to
of ways.
Podcast.
Probably more ways than you actually need.
Yeah.
Because
probably.
I just Google it and I put the number.
That,
So this is program 151, correct?
Did I just say that?
I'm just making sure, which means tomorrow's show or tonight's show when we come back here will be
152.
What do you think of that, huh?
I'm on
Pretty good. Math was one of my better subjects.
I know that.
And podcast it. If you miss the show, if you miss any portion of it, definitely check it out on podcast.
I love the podcast, actually.
I like it,
you
too.
You know, it has... Okay, we're going to move forward.
All right, ready for the conclusion? This is called Speed to Burn from June 26, 1949, the conclusion to Box 13.
Like I said, I was in, but in what? It looked like a legitimate business. The big garage did a roaring trade, and it seemed on the level. Mike, the man who took me to Swanson's office, stuck close to me, so I had no chance to snoop around. And one day, I was called into Swanson's office.
Well, Dan, everything all right?
As far as I know, everything's fine. Why?
Got any objections to working at night?
No, not at all. As long as the pay is time and a half.
It's better than that. It's double.
Special job?
Yeah, you might call it that. How good are you at keeping your mouth closed?
Well, I'm not the talkative type.
I suppose you know you've had a tail on you ever since you've worked here.
No, I didn't know. What's your idea there?
Well, you're an ex-con.
I thought that was gone by the boards, forgotten.
It is. But it's a funny thing. I've had a check made on you, and I can't find a record of any Dan Holliday serving time any place. Got anything to say?
Nothing, except maybe you looked under the wrong name.
Yeah, that's what I figured. Anyway, you've been watched, and so far you're clean.
Look, Mr. Swanson, you got me in here to talk about overtime work. Then you switched to my record. What's your pitch?
Come around tonight at 10 o'clock the back way.
Just suppose I say no.
Mike's a big guy. Maybe he could persuade you.
Oh, I see. In other words, now that I'm in, I'm really in.
In what, Dan?
Maybe you can answer that better than I can.
Maybe I can. Be here tonight at 10, the back entrance. Mike'll see that you get here. Until then... So long, Dan.
Well, it was a tight spot. I couldn't tell whether Swanson knew anything or not. I hadn't made a move to contact Nancy Peters or her brother Tom. But that night, I was to be at the garage at 10 o'clock. At 9:30, Mike came to get me, and 20 minutes later took me down in an elevator, down into the cellar below the big garage. And what I saw made me blink my eyes. Brother, this was a racket on a big scale.
Put your eyes back in your head, Dan. You ain't seen a half of it yet.
Hey, what is this?
The part of the garage nobody sees but them as has business here. Take a good look.
Must be 50 cars in here.
Uh-huh. And all hot.
Stolen?
They ain't presents. If you give them an hour in here, their owners wouldn't know them from a bicycle. Come on, we'll see Swanson.
Come in. Okay, Dan, come on in. Mike, see that things are running all right.
Sure. See you later, Dan.
Well, how do you like it, Dan?
I don't know what I'm supposed to like, but it's big.
And you're in it.
What if I don't want to be?
Oh, and you're a chump. Big pay, no Social Security or withholding tax, and no questions.
Look, I don't want to serve any more time.
You won't. We take care of our boys. Now, look, I need another mechanic badly. There are enough hot cars floating in here in the next 2 weeks to make yourself a pile of dough.
Yeah, but Mr. Swanson...
Holiday, you haven't got a choice. Either take the job or you'll never work again. Any place, any time.
I guess you're calling the turns, Mr. Swanson.
Take it easy, you'll be safe.
Until there's a leak.
There's no leaks here. We're big enough to have our own police force to watch the men who work for us, understand?
Yeah, I think I do. Okay, Mr. Swanson, you've got yourself another boy. And from then on, I was watched closer than all the gold in Fort Knox. It was over a week later that I finally made contact with Tom Peters. Mike took me to him because Tom was to break me in on a new job.
Mike wants you to work on the jalopies, huh?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. I'm Tom Peters. I know you're Dan Holliday.
Yeah. What do I do?
Well, we got 10 hot cars rolling in tonight. They got to be pulled apart for shipping out tomorrow.
That's a little fast, isn't it?
That's nothing. One night we put out 18. Come here. See this paint?
Yeah. Special stuff, huh?
That's right. Washes off with caustic soda. Plain water won't touch it, only caustic soda. We spray a coat of this stuff on the car.
And then what? What about the license plates?
You kidding? Look here. Over 500 license plates from different states. With a new paint job, different plates, even different tires, you wouldn't be able to recognize your own car if you sat in it.
I see. Pretty tight organization, isn't it?
Brother, you don't know how tight. Make a bad move and you're material for a hearse. Well, here to work on the manufacturer's numbers.
Serial numbers of the motors, huh?
Manufacturer's numbers. Never in the same place twice. Sometimes it's in the carburetor, sometimes in the block. Any one of a dozen different places.
I see. And you tear down the engine, get rid of the number, and there's no chance left for positive identification of the car.
Right. Okay, start tearing this baby down. It's got to roll out on the street by midnight. Let's go to work.
And I worked. And all the while I did, I knew I was being watched. And I think I was even followed when I went home. For 3 nights we kept at it. There wasn't a chance to break loose. Then on the fourth night, Tom Peters came over to me.
Shake loose from that job, Dan. We got a special to do.
Special? Okay, what is it?
Look here.
Are you kidding? This can't be a hot car.
No, it's not. What's it look like?
Like a broken down model of 10 years ago. Who wants a crate like this?
Wait a minute. Now, take a look under that hood.
Look at that power plant.
The engine's from a British tank. There's enough power under that hood to make this baby climb right up the side of a building.
I don't get it. Why put that motor in this old job?
Look underneath. The springs.
Springs upside down?
Sure. For a low center of gravity. And the body of the crate's lined with armor plate. And it's got bulletproof glass throughout.
What are these things inside? Oh, extra gas tanks.
This is a getaway car, special built. Parked this in front of a bank and no cop would take a second look at it. But no other car made can get near it for speed or power.
Now that's real, real neat. Well, looks like the boys think of everything, don't they?
They don't miss.
You know, I'll bet anyone could take a 1938 car and hop it up with one of these motors.
Sure, why not? Year don't make no difference.
Even a girl could drive one.
Sure, why?
One her brother put together for her before he got into this racket.
Girl? 1938? What'd you say that for?
Take it easy, Tom.
What are you driving at?
Nancy, your sister.
What about her?
She got me in here to get you out.
Oh, look, she's crazy. You're crazy. This is a tight box.
You want to get out?
Cut it out, Dan. You're asking for trouble.
Look, together we can break this, right?
Look, there's not a chance.
Hold it. Here comes Mike.
Hey, what are you guys gabbing for?
Just looking over this job, Mike. It's pretty sweet.
Yes. Well, get it in shape. Some of the boys want it for a heist job tonight. You got an hour to work it over.
Heist job?
Yeah. They're knocking over a bank.
Okay, help me, Tom, and I'll help you when we get out of this.
Listen, don't you think I'd have made a break before now? They got me going and coming.
And I'll do it.
They're watching you every minute.
That's the chance I have to take. Where's your lunch pail?
Lunch pail? Have you gone nuts?
Just give it to me. You drink coffee, don't you?
Sure. With cream and sugar. You happy now?
Later that night, when I was through working, I left the garage. I tried to phone Nancy Peters 3 times, but she was out. The last time, I left a message for her to meet me in the lobby of a movie. I went there hoping I'd shaken my shadow off my trail. Fortunately, she got my message. And I told her to call the FBI to give them the address of the garage, 714 South Elm, and to make it fast because there was no time to lose. Then I walked out of the lobby and into the street. I looked back.
Nancy Peters was going toward a phone booth in the theater lobby. I was about to walk to my room when...
Enjoy the picture, Holiday?
Mike.
Yeah, Mike. Funny about you. You bought a ticket, walked in, talked with that dame, came right out again.
I remember I'd seen the movie before.
Sure. Who was the dame?
What are you talking about?
The dame. Who was she? What did you say to her?
Look, Mike, that's my personal business.
And it's mine, too. She went to a phone booth inside.
Can I help it if some girl wants to use a phone?
Yeah, I figure you can. Now, come on. We're going to Swanson.
All right, Dan, who was the girl? What'd you say?
I never saw her before in my life.
Just a chance acquaintance, huh?
You could call it that.
You're lying.
All right, you know everything.
Not quite, but I... Wait a minute. Suppose your name is Dan Holiday.
Suppose it is.
I got an idea. Sit still while I look through the phone book. Honey, I never thought of this before. Let's see. Holiday, Dan. Well, you're in the phone book. There's only one Dan Holiday.
That makes me unique among the Holidays. What does it make you?
Not a sucker, Holiday. Sit still, make a move, and I'll make a nice round hole in your head with this. Now, we'll see. Dan Holiday, please.
Mr. Holiday isn't in.
Oh? Is he out of town, do you know?
Who's calling, please?
An old friend, Mr. Swanson.
Oh, well, Mr. Swanson, Mr. Holiday's been gone for almost 2 weeks.
Is that so? Well, thank you. Thank you very much. You've been gone 2 weeks, Holiday. That just about ties in with the time you've been here.
Okay, Swanson, so I'm in the phone book and you found out I'm not at my apartment. What does that prove?
That's what I'm going to find out. And if I...
Boss, there's a raid coming our way. The tip-off boys just flashed the wrench.
All right, move the hot cars out back. Get all you can. Notify all branches we're shipping a load tonight. Tell the drivers to take the ones that aren't ready and run them in the river.
Right.
Holiday, you're going with me. Get going.
That dirty thing do the job?
Yeah, come on. Getaway car in shape?
Yeah, it's all set.
Now, Holiday, you're going to see why we're never caught.
What's wrong, Mr. Swanson?
We have a stoolie with us, Peters.
Stoolie? But...
That's right, Peters. A stoolie.
Clear out. There's a raid coming. Mike, warm up the car.
Sure. It's okay. Nothing to worry about.
In, Holiday. Get in.
Okay, you're the boss.
Let's go, Mike. Up the ramp.
Right. There they are.
Play with them, Mike. Let Holiday see how good we really are.
But, boss.
You heard me. And I'm almost catch up to us. And, Holiday, don't duck when you hear shooting. They can't touch us in this. Besides, I want to save you for myself.
They're right on our taillight, boss.
Uh-huh. They might as well be using pea shooters.
Never get out of the city, boss.
Now, show them what we can do, Mike. Get away.
Yeah.
Holiday, they're almost standing still. Okay, Mike, head for the state line.
Hey, something's gone haywire.
What's the matter? You said this car was in shape.
Yeah, it was.
Get going, you idiot.
I can't get me in the engine. It's going dead.
Run on the curb. We'll make a run for it. Pull in, Mike. Pull in.
Oh, no, you don't.
Hey, Mike, help me.
You dirty rat, you.
You, Mr. Holiday?
Oh, sure, Susie. Just some minor cuts and bruises.
What happened?
Well, Mr. Swanson took his eyes off me for a second. That was enough. I grabbed his gun.
Jeepers. But what happened to the car?
Susie, put enough sugar in the gas tank of any car and it'll give up and die real soon. You see, it clogs the feed line. I took the sugar from Tom's lunch pail.
Now, that was real smart. But how did you know you were going to be in the car?
Well, I didn't. I planned to wreck the bank job. But as they say in books, sometimes things work out differently. And for the best.
Mm. What about Tom Peters?
He's all right. He was roped in. Fear made him stay. Hey, Susie, how about some coffee?
Oh, sure. Right here. Cream?
Thanks.
Sugar?
Lots of it, Susie. Lots of it. I just love sugar.
Listen in again next week when Alan Ladd stars as Dan Holliday in Box 13.
That's Box 13. Hope you enjoyed that. It's called Speed to Burn from June 26, 1949, starring Alan Ladd. Let's take a break. We'll be right back. Lisa just saw this show, right? You saw this Mercury Theater show.
I sure did.
With
Tony Bennett. I was there this week.
Oh, it wasn't Tony Bennett, but it was a tribute to his music.
Right. It's called I Left My Heart, a salute to the music of Tony Bennett with three wonderful singers and a four-piece orchestra, kind of a jazz band.
Yeah.
And it was a classy show. I really loved it. And just FYI, it will be running here at the Mercury Theater through March 5th of 2017. Go see it. It's a great show.
And who founded the Mercury Theater radio show? I know Dave would know this. Mercury Theater radio show. Oh, hang on a second. There we go.
That wasn't Orson, was it?
It was.
Orson
it
Welles?
It was Orson Welles.
Look at that.
And you know who his partner in crime was in those days? His producer and his collaborator at that time? I'll give you a hint.
Okay.
Paper Chase. Does that help?
Oh, John Houseman.
John Houseman.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That was his
collaborator.
Yeah,
he was old in the 70s, so I guess that makes sense.
It was a collaborator, and he was sort of you know, Orson was the creative,
right?
And John Houseman did all of the business transactions.
All the practical
stuff.
He was one of my idols, John Houseman.
Actually, I interviewed him at Triton
Houseman?
College Radio.
Did you really?
Yeah, Triton College
That's
Radio.
Awesome. I forgot about that.
Yeah. He gave a speech there.
Those were the days,
I was
huh?
Like, Mr. Houseman, can I interview?
That's pretty cool.
You?
Oh,
yeah.
He's pretty intimidating,
yeah.
huh?
Cool. Yeah. You were in the middle of telling a dirty joke. Go ahead.
Oh, no. No. He's always in the middle of something like that.
Oh, all right. It was hysterical. Oh, that was hysterical. We'll finish that later.
I hear there's like some kind of big sports event coming up tonight.
Yeah, big game.
Something like
big
that.
Game.
Yeah, what
big
is
game.
It? What's big it called?
It's the big Super Bowl today.
Oh, football.
Yeah.
That's the oblong.
Yeah, don't want to see the Patriots. Get on, Elliot.
Made out of pigskin or something like that?
Are you in for the Patriots or are you in for the...
At the end of the day, I just hope that football is the winner. And
okay.
We can all get a good hand toss game in, and there's lots of slam dunks, point scoring.
Okay, all right.
For the win. I'm actually going for the Falcons.
Me too. You know what? A little bit more of an underdog. I like Matt Ryan, and I'm tired of seeing Tom Brady up there.
Is it because you're jealous of the you're a good looking man, Dave Player, and I mean that in a purely platonic way. But are you jealous of the guy?
No, not at all. I'm really not. No. I'm ready for someone else to. And I don't think the Falcons have ever won a Super Bowl. They were in a Super Bowl. They've never won one.
There's only one thing. Well, I should say more than one thing that I would want that Tom Brady has. I'd like to have his bank account. And his woman.
I thought you were going in the Max's
his
commercial.
Prowess, she says. Wow.
I was keeping it clean.
Yeah, it was nicely done. It was nicely done.
She's a good-looking woman.
I don't think there's any dispute about that.
No, Giselle, right?
Elliot Bambury, you're hearing from Chicago's best, of course. You know.
Good morning, you have quite the show coming up here, buddy. Everybody should stick around
in studio.
For it.
I mean, a lot of people live in studio. Yeah. So we're going to break down every part of this game, which starts with food, and that's the big planning part of it is food and drink, right?
For the rest of us guys out there who aren't athletes, the most important part is how many calories you can consume. Yeah. In the three and a half, four hours of the game. That's the important stats at the end of the day. Go for the food MVP.
And don't forget about the halftime show.
Yeah.
Oh, that's always exciting.
That's pretty
and the commercials.
Yes.
Well.
And the commercials. So we're going to start with food. And I believe this is the biggest food consumption day now. Over Thanksgiving, actually. I think
as
Super
it should
Bowl
be.
Is, right? I think so.
This is America.
So food first, and then Adam Hoge's going to come in and actually talk about the game, but more of the dummies guide to the game. We're going to do that. Jeff Rogers, who you knew very well, or know very well from Zap Creative and Second City alum, we always break down the commercials themselves. And then Michael Heidemann, Kevin Richter, who hosts Sound Sessions, are going to do the halftime shows, just like you said there. And then Jared Payton's going to join us at the end of the show. That's why I'm wearing my Payton jersey, to talk about the Walter J. Payton Man of the Year Award that was awarded tonight. So
wow.
All kinds of Super Bowl stuff.
Yeah.
Right.
Be careful.
And when we come back.
I was going to say, we'll be
tonight,
back tonight be back at 11 tonight. P.m. Yep.
Post Super Bowl. You're going to be doing the
post
show.
We can talk about the game. Yeah. And we are also going to play Dangerous Assignment, The Bigger Sins, a personal favorite, and Murder at Midnight.
And we're going to talk to
Will
Paul
Murder at Midnight
Rapp.
Be on at midnight?
Yeah. No, it'll be on at 1.
No. Oh, see, that's confusing.
That's ridiculous.